Eric, this is a special edition of Stop the Movie I Want to Get Out. Usually, this is a podcast about some of the worst movies ever made and our sick fascination with them. We're going to turn it around. Usually, we are hating on bad movies. We are going 180 degrees in that. And for this special edition, we're going to be talking about movies that everyone hates, but at least one of us loves. And we're going to, you know, again, turn the concept on its head a little bit. So we're going to start off with, we're going to do a little roundtable, just talk about a couple of movies, defend them a little bit, see, you know, again, universally hated films. I'm joined by Jack Estabrook.
Hello.
Andy Wolf.
Hey.
Cody Wolf.
Hello.
Brian Muir out in the field, gathering more material for us right now. He'll be back soon. Cody, let's start with you. Start us off with the first of the movie you know that people hate, but you love.
Well, this is for this is a movie I legitimately love, and I watch probably far too often.
And one of the worst of the series, I would say.
And what most people think is the worst. And but I've always, it's funny, like I've always just loved it. And I, because I love the Nightmare on Elm Street films. They're my favorite slasher, you know, 80s slasher movies. But I love Freddy's Dead, Nightmare on Elm Street film. I don't know why. It's so wacky.
It's the least scariest
and
of
crazy.
Them all.
But it's, I don't watch it for scary. I watch it because it's just out there, and the whole thing's like just a wacky dream, and Alice Cooper's in it, and it's like...
It is out there.
It is out there.
I'm gonna reveal something. I saw Freddy's Dead in the theater with the 3D glasses.
Did you really?
I saw this in a theater with the 3D.
Is this the one where Jason Voorhees' hand comes up?
No.
Was that Fred? Okay, I'm confusing.
That's Jason Goes to Hell.
I just love the wackiness of it. I mean, it's just crazy and
I don't want to attack it because I don't hate Freddy's Dead, but I'm gonna put out there the kind of common consensus on this movie. This movie is often hated because it's barely even a horror film. I mean, this is
I don't watch it as a horror film. I watch it as just like a weird.
You've got Roseanne Barr and Tom Arnold in it.
That's briefly.
Yeah. Johnny Depp makes a cameo.
Johnny Depp is in it. Yes.
Johnny Depp was in the first one. Yep.
Yeah.
You got a kid who's killed by his hearing aid.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Like yeah. And I love that. The first time I saw it, I was like.
And Fred, the worst part of that one is the video game part, where the kids in the video game
so
and Fred's
though,
like doing
just,
the video game like yeah. make them do things. Oh.
And he puts on the glove and he's like, "Now we're playing with power." I like it. It's funny.
It almost is a product of its times. I feel like because back then in the early '90s, like in the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, did this brilliantly where Freddy became more than just like this horror film. Like he was everywhere.
Right.
Like kids' toys,
yeah,
like costumes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I mean, it was a pop culture thing.
Yeah. And it's because Rob Englund played the role so well,
it was hard to not like him.
And I did see this movie for the first time when I was like 4 or 5, probably. I was young when we first saw
what?
It.
What?
He rented it.
That's incredibly disturbing.
I started young.
And so it's just always stuck with me.
Wow. I commend you.
I think he was 3 when he watched Halloween 2.
I commend you.
We may be handing this tape over to social services.
Well, like you said, it's not like overly scary or anything. It's just kind of colorful and comic booky and just over, it's, you know.
I guess it's true, yeah. I mean,
like
Freddy is cracking jokes all movie.
Yeah, like every line is a joke.
I mean, it's all punchline. It's so early 90s because it's all like catchphrases and pop culture.
And the whole thing with going inside his head.
It was almost like...
That's one of the things I like.
Were they picking on the series?
Going into Freddy's past and like, you know, the... Like I said, Alice Cooper's his stepfather and he's a beast.
Those little stupid looking CG things, the little heads or what were they?
They're the dream demons.
They infect the dream semens.
Yeah.
What they look like.
It's so different. It's also hard to judge it too because the whole series had been shifting a little bit more.
4 is so bland and 5 is okay.
Yeah,
but 6 is just five took itself more seriously and didn't work, and 6 just kind of was like, let's just go over the top and just be crazy.
That happens with a lot of horror series. Is after a while it does become predictable. So I guess I could commend them for being original and trying to break that cycle.
Yeah, they're just like let's kill Freddy off and have fun with it, and just you know I I've seen it 8-9 times probably. You know, it's just a movie I watched all the time.
That's an interesting pick. That's a good
it is.
Andy, we're going to go to yours. I think Yours is another controversial pick
here. Well, right, because I know there are people who do like the movie. I know everybody I talk to really hates the movie. But I've watched it a number of times. I still love... I hated it the first time I watched it. I have to admit that. I rewatched it, and then I liked it more. It was the Blair Witch Project.
I'm going to attack this. Well, I'm not going to attack it. I have a complicated relationship with the Blair Witch Project. I saw the Blair Witch Project in the theater that summer right. of 99. This seems like, well, this is a long time ago. This movie's blowing up. It's huge. Everyone's talking right. about
Everyone's
it.
Everyone's like, talking about the time,
you know,
yeah.
Like, my mom knew about this movie. If my mom knows about a movie, it's way into the mainstream. I hated it. I hated the movie until about the last 4 minutes. And right. I think the movie has a great ending. I think the ending is fantastic. One of the better horror movie endings I can think of. But, man, you are sitting through... I hate everything but maybe the last 4 minutes. In fact, I remember watching it and saying I was so amazed that I was even enjoying the last 4 minutes because I was done.
I know. I didn't see it in theater. I waited till video and I watched it and I hated it. I thought it wasn't scary at all. And then I think it was like $5 and I bought it and I watched it again. I was like, again, I'm an atmosphere guy. I like the whole. I like the setup. I like the interviews in the beginning. Like they get a story set up, nice little atmospheric story. Then they get in the woods, and man, I can understand how it's like kind of gets a little lengthy in the woods.
I have an interesting Blair Witch Project story. When Blair Witch Project came out, it was the summer of 99. It was the summer after I graduated high school. I graduated high school in 99, and I remember the movie was out, and as Alex said, there was a huge buzz about the film. And everyone was talking about it. I had to see it. Now, some people actually bought into the idea that it was real. I, of course, did not. I was like, well, of course it's not real. But when I went and saw it in theater with my friends, I just let myself go. And I watched that film. I was riveted. I was horrified. I was terrified. I thought it was really creatively done. I particularly loved the end scene where she's screaming, but the microphone is downstairs, so right. we hear her. She's far away, even though we're looking at her camera. I thought that was great. I thought the ending was great. I was riveted. I was trembling in my seat. It's very rare that a movie does that to me, especially in a theater with a crowd of people. So I told all my friends about the movie who hadn't seen it. About a year later, at a friend's house, a college friend's house, a party, and, well, hey, let's turn on the Blair Witch Project. I got a copy of it. I just bought it. I never seen it. It must be good, right? I said, oh, my God. This movie is so phenomenal. This is going to be the scariest movie you've ever seen. We popped in the DVD. About 10 minutes in, I'm sitting there, and in my own mind, I'm like, oh my dear God, what have I just done? This is so boring. It's so poorly shot. It's so poorly edited. Having now seen it, I now know exactly what's going to happen. How could anybody have believed this? How the hell could I have liked this? And by the end of the night, everybody basically said what Alex said. Jack, what the hell is wrong with you? That movie was terrible. I mean, that last scene was good, but what the hell? Why didn't they just... Who throws the map in the creek? Why not just follow the water and you'll eventually get out of the
forest? They did follow the water. Well, but the witches messed with them, so they didn't...
So I saw it and I regret... I felt embarrassed and I had to try to regroup and defend my decision. Be like, well, when I saw it in the theater, it was kind of good. And okay, so I felt embarrassed about how bad the movie was and I never saw it again after that.
But that's my problem with it is, like the first hour of the movie is just them walking around arguing. Like, it's not a horror film. It's not even a suspense film. It's just...
It's home video.
It's just home video of people arguing. I mean, it's...
Well, no. Well, so I was saying, like, in the very beginning, they're getting the story rolling. They're talking to interviews in the town of Blair or whatever. And it's like, it really gets you, like, an atmosphere going. Yeah, and then they get in the woods, they're arguing. But they kind of like, oh, they found a little cemetery. I mean, they're arguing, but they have little things along the way that keep the story going for me.
I did buy it when I first saw it. I did. What I like to say is it's a great movie if you've never seen it before. But never, ever watch it again. Because I watched it the second time, and now I hate it. Because I was like, oh my God, the camera work is terrible, and the acting is horrible. How can anybody have believed this? Except the final 5 minutes. I still love the final 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But then after that second viewing, I was just kind of like, why did I think it was so scary? That's never happened to me with a movie before.
It wasn't scary at all. Yeah, I never thought it was scary.
I bought into it.
I just really feel in hindsight, like they should have reevaluated their concept, and I think it needed... a little more structure. The middle of the movie in particular needed a lot more structure. I mean, I get the idea that they were going for it. It was all unscripted. They were kind of making it up as they went, but it gets repetitive. I just think it's hard to watch, you know, towards the end. I can't. I'll defend the final 5 minutes of that movie to anyone, but I can't defend anything else on that.
I like it. I've watched it a number of times.
All right. All right, I'm gonna throw my next pick in here. This is a movie. I don't know how many of you guys have seen it. I have a weird fascination with this movie. I remember seeing it in the theater, and I've owned it on VHS. I've owned it on DVD. I currently own it on iTunes. Cutthroat Island.
Gina Davis, Rennie Harlan.
It's known
Rennie
as
debacle. Harlan.
It's known as the Gina Davis pirate movie.
Wow.
I will say this before I defend this movie and my fascination with it, there are parts of it that are horrible. Gina Davis.
Parts!
Big parts.
Parts!
I mean,
Gina
Davis and Matthew Modine, who are the two stars of the film.
Don't forget Frank Langella.
Frank Langella is fantastic.
Frank Langella is fantastic in anything he does. I'll give you that.
Langella is fantastic.
Except for maybe Masters of the Universe.
He almost saves the movie. Gina Davis and Matthew Modine are unwatchable. I mean, they're terrible. Their performances, terrible. The script, terrible. Their dialogue, terrible. And the story is like just a bunch of pirate movie cliches loosely strung together with terrible dialogue. But Frank Langella as the bad guy is so much fun to watch. The movie can hold you together just waiting for Frank Langella's scenes to come on. And the movie is also notorious. One of the biggest Hollywood box office losers of all time.
Yeah.
I forget how much it would cost. It cost well over $100 million to make this movie. This is a movie where you see every one of those $100 million. Like, when you watch this movie, you're never like, I wonder where the money went. I mean, I just love looking at this movie. There's an action scene towards the end, which sadly most people never get to this scene,
yeah,
where two full-scale pirate ships are blasting cannons and fighting with each other. And this is not CGI or like, they actually built two full-scale pirate ships to have this full-blown like battle. It's an incredible scene. I can't even imagine just what that sequence alone must have cost. And for that, I love watching it. And there's a lot of ideas. It has a fantastic score. Like, for me, I can kind of detach Matthew Modine and Gina Davis and enjoy the rest
of the
movie.
Of all the people to put in a pirate movie, too, Matthew Modine and Gina Davis, really?
So yeah.
Basically, wasn't it so bad that they didn't want to do the Pirates of the Caribbean movie because they were scared?
Yeah, it was. It scared Hollywood off from doing
pirate
movies.
Well, yeah, because Gina Davis was at her height.
Well, yeah, what happened to her?
Because
kind of
after Harlow
that movie,
was at his height.
Yeah,
Rennie Harlan. Yeah, yeah.
Harlan.
Yeah,
he's good at directing sequels.
He was at his height, and
he did a couple of Nightmare
and this
movies,
is a big
right?
Bomb, yeah.
The oh, it one. Basically killed
Die Hard 2.
I mean, Gina Davis only really did one other big time movie, which was she and Rennie Harlan did A Long Kiss Goodnight, which came out about a year after. But basically, this killed Gina Davis's movie career.
It didn't seem much of
Matthew Modine, just his movie career ended after this.
Yeah.
I mean, he was done. I mean, and Harlan never really... I mean, luckily, I think they already had A Long Kiss Goodnight in the works when they made this, because he was never really the same again. I mean,
yeah.
It sank. It's a pirate movie. Catch that humor. All their careers. But it's strange... watchable. I challenge more people to watch it.
And it sounds like because of the atmosphere and the there's certain things in it that kind of hold you.
You can just look at it. Like, I mean, just this is a rare movie where the production design alone, you can just watch this movie and be like, wow, you know.
Right. It's like with me you're making fun of me before, like Knight's Tale.
I can watch it
because I love the jousting parts. Shut up, you.
You, sir, are insane.
I saw that
movie in the theater.
I was going to pick that one, but
I almost threw up my popcorn.
But the jousting and the sword fighting, I can watch
the Golden
Years
sequence.
We're
Nike about, swoosh. I could go on for hours about a horrible
movie. Yeah, we're talking about The Knight's Tale. The movie, the sword and sorcery movie that also features rock music.
But I like the jousting stuff, and that it keeps me interested.
And the Nike swoosh.
So same thing with Cutthroat Island. It's like the whole atmosphere of the... And the
boy, I can't... I guess
dodged
I,
a bullet. Had that been your choice?
Yeah. I was going to choose that one.
I guess I can't argue with that, because I'm saying the same thing about Cutthroat Island, but boy, A Knight's Tale is... that is hard.
I would watch Cutthroat Island 10 times over before I saw Knight's Tale again.
And Frank Langella is... He really... He should be angry, because he gives an incredible performance in Cutthroat Island and is surrounded by this awful script, awful performances. He's like this, like, rose in the desert of, like, awfulness around him.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
You know. But, you know, and worth seeing. All right, Jack, what do we got for your pick?
This kind of fits in with Cody's choice as a movie that's bad, that people tend to hate, that's part of a series of movies that are loved by legions of fans. I don't know why I like it, but I do. I watch it a lot. It's Moonraker.
Oh, James Bond in space.
I don't know why, but it works. It's got all the elements that should suck. Like, they bring Jaws back, but they give him a love story. They have all the actors walking in cheesy slow motion to try to simulate zero gravity. He's in space. They're astronauts with laser beams firing at each other. This movie should be terrible. The bad guy is wearing the costume that they reused from a previous Bond film. It's still... I love it. It's just wild, it's crazy, it's wacky, and it just works. It's just Bond dominating in outer space. How much cooler can that be? I'm sorry, I love it. There, I said it.
I'll go with you on that. I should hate this movie. I mean, on for all the reasons you said, I should hate this movie. And yet, when I was a kid, I sort of loved it. I don't even know why, because it also looks incredibly cheap.
Absolutely.
This is the cheapest looking James Bond movie. It made even worse by the fact that they're trying to do these sci-fi elements. The space sets look terrible. The lasers, I mean, everything looks like straight. Like, it's like the Land of the Lost production crew was brought in for a James Bond movie. I mean, it's really bad. But, like, Roger Moore kind of pulls it off.
He pulls it off. Well, I know there's a lot of Roger Moore haters out there, but I think he works. And I think that this movie works. I don't know why. It just does.
I think it just... For what it, you know, it doesn't take itself too seriously, and I mean, it's better than the last three Pierce Brosnan ones, I can say. You know,
I saw that one time. Thank you, Cody. Saw it the one time, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And Roger Moore, I'm a Roger Moore guy, and I remember enjoying it, not thinking anything like.
Well, I know a lot of people knock it because it was rushed. Star Wars came out, and they said, we got to put Bond in outer space. Yeah. The original novel, Moonraker, to my understanding, I never read it, but to my understanding, has nothing to do with outer space, mm-hmm. right?
Or yeah, at least very little. Like a missile or something.
Yeah, and it's this madman named Drax who builds this space station, and he wants to breed a master race in space. Then he wants to, like, kill everyone on Earth so that then they can... have a new order in space that he will rule. And for some reason, he hires this 8-foot-tall Richard Kiel thug from the previous Bond movie who doesn't really fit. And they give him a love story with this incredibly short lady. And it's just...
It's totally ridiculous.
I love it. I'm sorry. I do. You guys want to email at Wind Up Films and just start... hammering out why you hate this Bond movie.
If you want to comment on any of these, feel free to email into windupfilms@gmail.com. And we should note, I mean, somewhere out there, there are, like, Bond fans seething as they hear us, like, defending this.
They want to kill me, I know.
Pretty much universally seen as the war. Well, I don't know. A lot of the Roger Moore films.
Most of them. I would imagine, I hear...
It's got to be right up there with the most hated.
Most people I know who I say that to are like, Moonraker, you know? It's like, come on, it's Moonraker.
It looks so... I watched some scenes from it.
I saw it as an adult. Alex is like, I saw it as a kid. I'm like, no, I didn't watch any Roger Moore films until I was a teenager. Yeah. So I saw this movie when I was older, and I still liked it.
I flicked through in one of those, like, TBS or TNT, they do, like, the Bond marathons. Yeah. I flicked through, and I remember just looking at it and being like, man, those sets look like they were built in, like, a day. Like, it just...
The Austin Powers sets looked better. The ones picking on it.
Yeah, I mean, like, it looks like a high school stage crew just put this together. I mean, just... I was just looking at it, and yet, at the same time, I was, like, not totally hating it. I was like, oh, okay, you know. I don't know. And it's not before... Roger Moore was young enough that he wasn't total comedy as James Bond at that point.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he does get a little older later on.
When you get into A View to a Kill, you know, it's really uncomfortable watching him punch people because you're wondering. I'm more concerned about like osteoporosis and like.
And then he's making out with some girl that he could be this girl's grandfather.
Yeah, I mean, really, that gets uncomfortable. And then, you know, luckily Moonraker.
In Moore's defense, I know some of those later movies he didn't want to do.
Well,
but Moonraker, I think it was on board with.
Yeah,
and I'm glad that he was because I enjoyed it. There, I said it.
There they are, four relatively controversial picks, and that's where it is. If you have suggestions for future episodes of Stop the Movie, I Want to Get Out, feel free to email them windupfilms@gmail.com. Feel free to contact us. Wind Up Films also on Facebook, and yeah, that is wrapping up this special edition. Of
very special
edition. Very, very special edition. Oh, if this was like a 1980s, like NBC would be like,
very special.
Yeah. An episode you and your family should watch together. Special.
Very special.
Yeah,
those tonight are, on a very special episode.
That's what it always was. Yeah,
we have to have some dramatic moment. Like,
there was always like some life lesson in the, I used to hate, when Family Ties used to be like, an episode your family should all watch. It would be like, okay.
Someone's going to be offered drugs or something. Yeah, you have to sit down and tell... You know,
be like,
Kirk Cameron about the dangers of whoever, Michael J. Fox about the dangers of drug use or whatever.
Why don't they just say no in the TV Guide summary and save everyone a lot of time?
Yeah.
That is our special episode. We will be back very soon, hopefully with a special theatrical episode of Stop the Movie, I Want to Get Out. Brian Muir and I braved the Katherine Heigl action comedy, One for the Money. This is not, just a quick preview. This is not One for the Money. You should not spend any money on this. Do not hand over any money to see Katherine Heigl in this movie. And we'll have that coming up. And we just decided we're also going to be doing the remake of The Wicker Man, featuring Nicolas Cage. I think we're all. Have any of us seen this? Has anyone?
No.
Okay.
I am a Wicker Man remake virgin.
Okay, none of us have seen, so we're all going to see... I've seen the original, but this is going to be all of our first time.
When it's in theater,
I'm going to re-watch the original before watching this so I can make comparisons at the next recording.
It was in the theater.
That is, but I'm willing to sit through a good Christopher Lee movie than sit through a bad Nicolas Cage one.
Yeah. When I was in the theater, somebody saw it that I knew, because I wanted to see it, and they said, this movie sucked.
Okay. Wow,
I haven't seen it since. I don't even, not even video.
And that's the original we're talking about, or the remake?
No, the remake.
Oh, the remake.
No, the remake.
Okay.
Yeah, they're like, right. So I was like, well, I won't borrow.
Well, Nicolas Cage, it's you never know what you're gonna get. we're about to find out. All I know is there is a lot of Nicolas. This is the one thing I've learned from watching clips on YouTube. Nicolas Cage punches a lot of women in this movie.
Really?
They make that pretty clear on YouTube, which is very troubling. And I don't know why there's so many clips of that on YouTube, but. If you Google this on YouTube, you will see a lot of Nicolas Cage, and I mean straight up punching them in the face. like closed fist, like, straight up punch out style.
Really?
Like, yeah, it's really disturbing. Actually, I don't know what context the movie's going to put that in. That's upcoming. Remake of The Wicker Man. And yeah, that is it for this episode of Stop the Movie, I Want to Get Out, and we will see you later.